She felt Dominique's body heat radiate onto her skin. It won't be a speech, chérie. Dominique smiled back. Maybe this was one of those rare moments when they were on exactly the same wavelength. And this is exactly the right setting. What better place to lay my heart bare than naked in bed with you? Steph had no answer to that. She had something she wanted to say herself. Something that had become very clear to her over the course of yesterday as well. But she would let Dominique do the talking for now. Saturday, when you arrived at the hospital, Dominique started. Even though I didn't know yet what was going on with Lisa, just seeing you there, just being able to hold you and have you near made the whole situation a lot more bearable for me. When I said that I needed you, I don't think I've meant any words more in my life. Not only is this presidency lock no fun without you to come home to after performing my duties, but what I realized when I saw Lisa lying there so helplessly is that it means nothing without you and my children in my life. I don't want to be the kind of president who doesn't know how to keep her private life together. I'm convinced even that having a stable home life will make me better at my job. She paused. Steph was glued to her words as always. I want to see the children more, and I want to see you more. I've already talked about it with Philippe. He agrees. She smiled that winning smile. Now all I need is for you to agree.
Aren't you forgetting someone? Steph said.
Dominique shook her head. No.
What about Solange? What about your father?
Solange works for me and not the other way around. My father is not the president. I am. He'll just have to deal with it.
Have you made any concrete plans to make this more than just words?
Dominique nodded. The children will stay over 2 nights a week. And as for us, I wanted to ask you what you wanted. I'm wide open to negotiations about my time.
I think my issue is mostly that I feel like I can't make those kinds of demands on your time. That it's not my place to do so.
I need you to ask me. If you don't, I get so easily sidetracked with everything that's going on all the time.
How about a weekly PR strategy meeting about your next campaign? Right in this very bed, Steph said. A recurring 2-hour block in your calendar.
I do like the sound of that.
You only have the right to cancel 3 times per year. If you cancel more, they have to be postponed to another time the same week.
Dominique nodded. It sounds as though you've been thinking about this.
It's all I've been thinking about.
Any other ideas? Dominique placed her hand on Steph's hip. Before negotiations take an inevitable turn.
You come to bed no later than 11 p.m., 4 nights a week.
Does that include the evenings the children are here? Steph considered this. She needed to remain realistic.
Yes.
Dominique slipped her hand from under the duvet and held it out to Steph. Let's shake on it. Steph shook Dominique's hand and didn't let go. She brought it to her lips and kissed a knuckle, then another.
Staying at Juliette and Nadia's is nice, but I'm glad to be back in my more palatial surroundings. It suits me better.
Dominique chuckled. I knew you came back for the palace more than for me, but it's fine.
As long as I have you naked in this bed every night. Now that we've sorted this out, what do you propose we do with the rest of the morning?
I want to go back to the hospital later, Dominique said. But before that, I think it's time we start our weekly PR meetings.
What does PR stand for in this instance?
Steph asked. Personal relations, rather than public ones. Dominique maneuvered herself on top of Steph.
Really? Steph said. After all of this, you're not even going to let me top you?
Dominique smiled down at her. Debate about it all you want, babe.
It will make you all the wetter.
Steph chuckled and shook her head. Just kiss me already. I'll do so much more than that, my darling.
Dominique kissed her and let her tongue delve deep into Steph's mouth from the get-go. Steph let her hands meander over Dominique's back and reveled in the touch of Dominique's skin, her lips on hers.
I want you, Dominique said.
Steph nodded.
I mean, I really want you, Dominique repeated.
I know very well what you mean. Steph pulled Dominique close and kissed her fiercely. Then she let go of her and Dominique slipped off the bed. She opened the bottom drawer of her nightstand and dug up a tool they hadn't used in a while. Steph watched as Dominique slipped into the special pair of briefs and fitted the dildo. She did it so swiftly that, in a matter of seconds, she climbed back in bed with her, fully strapped on.
Where were we? Dominique asked.
The toy rested against Steph's inner thigh, and the mere sensation of it against her skin made her clit pulse. She couldn't wait to feel it inside her, nor could she wait to see the look in Dominique's eyes when she slid it in. Combined, the two events never failed to arouse a fire so great in Steph's belly. It always made her breath catch in her throat, made her so hot. She instantly forgot she'd ever had a debate about who was going to top whom. Dominique's hands roamed over Steph's skin, halted at her breasts and cupped them reverently in the palms of her hands. God, Steph had missed Dominique's ways. She always started things out so gently, and always ended exactly the opposite. Dominique kissed her breasts, one after the other. A quick nibble with her teeth alerted Steph to the fact that things were about to heat up. They couldn't do so quickly enough. Dominique kissed her belly, let her lips wander around Steph's pubic hair, then kissed her straight on the clit. Oh yes, things were surely heating up. Steph spread her legs a little wider. She wanted to let Dominique know she was ready. Every word Dominique had spoken earlier had aroused her, made her wet because in the right circumstances, Dominique's speeches had that effect on her. God, she wanted her. Really wanted her. While licking her clit, Dominique slipped a finger inside of her. What she encountered apparently surprised her so much that she lifted her head from between Steph's legs and cocked an eyebrow at her. Steph took the opportunity to say the two words she knew Dominique wanted to hear more than anything. Fuck me. Dominique held her gaze for a second longer, then let her finger slide out, and slowly slipped the dildo inside of Steph. She planted her hands on either side of Steph's head and looked deep into her eyes. While she gently started fucking Steph, she said,
Welcome home, babe.
Zoya stared at the Barbier and Sear sign outside the building. She took a deep breath. Stepping inside might change her life. Zoya wasn't only looking for a new job and a new career. She was looking for another part of the glue that would keep her in Paris. Not that she ever felt Camille alone wasn't enough to keep her there, but as the saying went, one can't live on love alone. Zoya needed outside intellectual stimulation and friends with whom she could not only feel a connection, but also have interesting conversations. Friends like Steph, who opened doors for her. Like the door opening to her now. A young man came to greet her in the lobby and escorted her up to the Barbier and Sear headquarters. Camille hadn't given her much of a pep talk this morning. She'd just said, Be yourself and everything will work out. While Zoya appreciated the sentiment behind these words, they weren't very helpful. The man started speaking to her in French, and Zoya tried her very best to understand what he was saying, but she had to ask him if he spoke English before the elevator reached the right floor. Definitely something to work on. Zoya. Steph greeted her with wide open arms outside the elevator. Thanks, Fred, she said to the man. Zoya stepped into Steph's hug. She could do with a pair of friendly arms around her. Steph's eyes sparkled, and there was a grin plastered to her face. Surely she wasn't that happy to have Zoya interview at Barbier and Cyr. "What's up with you?" Zoya asked as they walked along the corridor. "Won the lottery or something?"
"The lottery?"
Steph stopped walking and faced Zoya.
"Dominique and I are back together. So I guess I have won the lottery of romance."
Zoya chuckled at Steph's emotions on display like that, and her cheesiness. "I'm so happy for you."
"Lisa's hand is going to make a full recovery."
"Oh, good news." They started walking again.
"And soon, you and I will be colleagues. So it just doesn't stop, does it?"
"Let's not get ahead of ourselves, shall we?"
Steph shook her head.
"As far as I'm concerned, this is a done deal. All that's left to happen is a discussion about your tasks and a negotiation about your salary. I'm serious."
A tingle took root in Zoya's stomach.
"And how many French lessons I'll need to take?" she joked.
"Don't worry about your French. If you stay in Paris long enough, you'll pick it up as you go along. Some grammar lessons might be needed. But I can assure you that if you hang around here all day, you'll pick up the curse words first."
She opened the door to an office.
"Both Claire and Juliet curse like sailors. You'll see."
"What was that?"
Claire said as she rose to greet Zoya.
"The pot calling the kettle black again?"
Claire held Zoya's shoulders in a tight clasp as she kissed her on both cheeks.
"That was quite a dinner party, Zoya. We must return the favor soon."
"Why don't you get through your wedding first?" Juliet said,
then treated Zoya to the same greeting.
"It was so lovely to have you as our guests. It really was."
Zoya couldn't explain it, but she already felt at home. She connected to these women in a way she hadn't dared dream of when she'd first moved to Paris. She briefly allowed herself the fantasy of coming to work here every day.
"Have you heard from Aurore?" Claire asked, ignoring Juliet's comment. "Is there something going on between her and Solange?"
"What?"
Steph said.
"Not in a million years would that ice queen be interested in someone with, her words, not mine, such loose morals as Aurore, let alone in another woman."
Nadia was convinced something was going on between them as well, Juliet said.
"Absolutely no way," Steph said. "I will bring you both 3 espressos a day for a month if something ever happens between Aurore and Solange. I am that certain of the improbability."
"Ooh, the stakes are raised," Claire said.
"Zoya, you are witness to this rash statement from our colleague. Let's shake on it."
Nadia's not often wrong about these things. Juliet held out her hand to shake on it as well. Zoya stood there looking on in bewilderment. Claire must have noticed the look on her face.
"Lest you think this is all we do here, let's sit down and talk about you, Zoya."
They all moved swiftly to a table by the window, except for Steph, who ambled towards them, seemingly lost in thought.
"What is it?" Claire asked.
"Juliet is right. Nadia's not often wrong about these things. I just wonder what she saw that I missed. I should give her a call later."
She sat down.
"Aurore and Solange has somehow come to an agreement to have Dominique go head-to-head with Riviere about the bill on Aurore's show. All of this after Solange has banned Aurore from ever setting foot in the Élysée again. Maybe I've had my head too far up my backside to notice, and this whole business with Dominique made me lose my observational mojo."
She tapped a finger against her chin.
"They might be a bit more chummy, but there's just no way they would ever get together. It must be the budding friendship between them that Nadia picked up on."
She straightened her back.
"I'll stop by Solange's office tonight, and we'll get to the bottom of this. Now that I no longer have my own love life to worry about."
Juliet rolled her eyes.
"She's been way too chirpy all day."
"I do prefer chirpy Steph over mopey Steph," Claire added.
Zoya couldn't help but chuckle.
"This is what you have to look forward to when you work here," Steph said. "TMI water cooler moments all day long."
"It makes me wonder what you've been saying about me around the water cooler."
Zoya put on a wide smile.
"Only good things, I promise," Juliet said. "So let's make this happen."
An hour later, Zoya had been offered a job, a generous pay package, and the prospect of 2 new bosses to get friendly with, along with a deepening of her bond with Steph.
"Think about it," Claire said. "But let us know as soon as possible."
Juliet sent her a warm smile.
I don't have to think about it.
Zoya sat up a little straighter.
You've just made me an offer I can't refuse. I locked Bobby in here from the very first moment I set foot in it. I would be honored to work here. Truly, it'd be a dream come true.
Just so you know, Steph said. Despite many attempts, we do a horrible job of keeping our personal and work lives separate. These two are always up in my business.
Says the woman who seduced our most high-profile client ever, Claire said.
Her face blank, but her eyes glinting. Excuse me. She seduced me, Steph said. A well-established fact by now.
Juliet shook her head. Here we go again. She glanced at Zoya. I'm sure Steph will give you a detailed rundown of who has slept with whom. Since she has discovered monogamy, she can't get enough of chatting about that kind of stuff. I look forward to hearing all about it.
Zoya couldn't wait to relay all of this to Camille.
This place of work must be the opposite of what Camille has to deal with every day. Since I'm a freelancer, my notice period won't be very long. I have a couple of remaining assignments to get done, but I should be able to start very soon.
Music to our ears, Claire said. We've just acquired the floor above, so we'll have a very nice office waiting for you.
Steph quirked up her eyebrows.
They're really bringing you in through the big fancy gate. I had to sleep with the president before I got a decent office.
She shrugged.
No hard feelings, of course.
I really can't thank you enough, Zoya said. I can't believe how fast things have progressed from me coming here for the first time and having this silly dream of working here to having a contract. Life can be really funny that way.
It's not all going to be this much fun, Steph said. Maybe you can become the liaison with Dominique's chief of staff when we start preparing for the next election, so I don't have to deal with Solange anymore.
Aren't you supposed to become best buds?
Zoya asked.
In the spirit of the banter she had witnessed, I wouldn't want to stand in the way of that.
Hear, hear, Claire said.
I'm sorry, but I have to dash. Another wedding dress fitting? Juliet asked.
Claire nodded. The wedding's in 2 weeks.
What's Margot wearing for the occasion? Is her dress made of black leather? Will she ride in on her motorcycle?
Steph asked.
You'll just have to wait and see.
Claire walked over to Zoya and held out her hand. Good to have you on board. We're going to do a lot of great work together and have a bunch of fun while we're at it.
Aurore rang Solange's bell, wondering which Solange she was going to greet in a few seconds. Relaxed or uptight Solange? As soon as the door opened, her question was answered. Solange looked as if a storm cloud was hanging over her head. Aurore greeted her with a slightly prolonged peck on the cheek nonetheless.
Dare I ask what's wrong? She said, her tone light. Is Dominique still coming on the show tomorrow?
This was the official reason for Aurore's visit to Solange's home. They would go over the questions together, so Solange could okay them. An activity that could have taken place at Solange's office at the Élysée, yet the chief of staff had invited Aurore to her home again.
It's not that. It's Stephanie.
That old chestnut, Aurore joked.
Have you said something to her about our conversation?
Solange stood with her hands on her sides. There was obvious reproach in her tone.
Of course not. Apart from a text to ask how Lisa was doing, I haven't even spoken to her.
Then how do you explain her coming to my office earlier today, a huge grin on her face, asking whether I'd warmed up to you?
Beats me. Besides, it's an innocent enough question. Steph knows all about how we were at each other's throats not long ago, and now we've set up this radio debate. Maybe she was just curious.
You weren't there. She had this look about her.
What kind of look would that be?
Aurore felt a secret pang of glee at seeing Solange stressing out about something as silly as Steph winding her up.
As if she knew something.
Not that there's anything to know.
Last Sunday, after changing the topic, they'd had dinner, and Solange, employing all the tricks she had picked up over the course of 2 decades in politics, had ducked all of Aurore's more probing questions. They'd had a nice enough evening, but the air of intimacy had evaporated as they had sat down to dinner.
as though Solange had suddenly realized she had given away too much.
Probably just yanking your chain. You know what Steph's like.
She's not supposed to be yanking my chain anymore. But now that she and Dominique are back together, she has that smug air about her again.
Aurore couldn't shake the impression that Solange's mini meltdown about Steph didn't have much to do with Steph at all.
You have to let it go, Solange. They're back together. The president is happy again. That's what matters. She'll be in good spirits for the interview tomorrow. And Riviere has agreed. Everything is working out. This was going to be a triple win, remember? For everyone but me, it seems.
Solange finally led the way inside her living room. Aurore put an arm on her shoulder. Solange all but flinched at her touch.
What's really going on?
Solange took a step away from her and sighed.
Yesterday morning, I knocked the way I always do before I enter Dominique's office. She said to enter, which I did, only to find her with her tongue buried in Stephanie's mouth. Of course, I'm happy they're back together, but is a little discretion really that much to ask for? They're in the Élysée, for heaven's sake.
Aurore was getting an inkling of what was going on, of what Solange was so desperate to communicate, but would rather die than say out loud. But she wasn't sure yet how to deal with it. For now, she would let Solange rant, then try to put a stop to it so they could get some work done.
They're newly reunited. It'll pass, she said. How about a glass of wine?
Solange shook her head. No, I've had way too much wine lately. Could I possibly have a glass of something?
Solange rubbed her palms on her stiff black trousers.
Saint-Emilion?
If you're offering.
Aurore tried a smile, but Solange didn't reciprocate. The chief of staff was nervous. Aurore gathered it wasn't about the interview.
She believed it had nothing to do with work, or Dominique, or even Steph at all. Thanks.
She fruitlessly tried to hold Solange's gaze when she handed her the glass of wine. When Solange sat down on the sofa, Aurore sat down next to her.
Do you have the questions? Solange asked, her voice tight. I do. But can I ask you something else first?
Solange pushed herself against the armrest of the sofa. She made Aurore feel as though she was cornering her, even though she had left a fair amount of space between them.
If you must, Solange said. Why are you so wound up? Is it perhaps not so much that Steph asked you that question, but that she asked it about me?
I don't know what she, or you for that matter, want from me. But whatever it is you think you're doing, it's not going to work. Not with me.
I'm not doing anything, Solange. You asked me here, I came. I can tell you're upset, so I'm asking what's the matter. It's a perfectly logical thing to be happening. The only thing that doesn't add up is your behavior.
I just haven't been sleeping well after our conversation last Sunday.
It did end rather abruptly. We can continue if you like. I'm here if you want to talk.
Solange looked her in the eye for the first time since Aurore had arrived. Aurore saw her swallow hard.
Will you put that glass of wine down, please?
Her voice had gone low and hoarse, as though she suddenly had difficulty speaking.
Sure.
Aurore put the wine glass on the coffee table.
May I ask why?
Solange still sat there, staring at her. She shook her head. Then, in a flash, she scooted closer, brought her hands to Aurore's cheeks, heaved a deep sigh, and kissed her on the lips. Aurore was too stunned to kiss Solange back right away, and by the time she'd recovered, Solange had dropped her hands and pushed herself away again. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. I thought, that you... I don't know. I'm sorry.
Aurore smiled softly at Solange.
She reached for her hand and took it in hers.
Come back here, she whispered. You took me by surprise.
Solange sank her teeth into her bottom lip, then shuffled back in Aurore's direction.
I've, been having trouble getting you off my mind. Every time I let my guard down, there you are, she said.
Is that so?
Aurore couldn't keep a hint of laughter out of her voice. Please don't mock me for this. I know this makes me look like a hypocrite. Like... Aurore brought a finger to Solange's lips.
Shh. It doesn't matter. I'm not mocking you.
She slowly let her finger fall away from Solange's lips.
How about a proper kiss?
Solange nodded. Aurore tilted her head, closed her eyes, and pressed her lips against the president's chief of staff's. Part of her knew she shouldn't be doing this, that she was repeating that ever-returning pattern. But what could she possibly do? Stop kissing Solange? There was just no way. She might not have been able to admit it to herself, but she had wanted to kiss her for a long time, perhaps since that very first time she had been invited here. Aurore opened her lips and let Solange's tongue slip inside. Instinctively, she tried to wind her fingers through her hair, but it was pulled into a firm ponytail. Aurore found the elastic band holding Solange's hair together and tugged it down. She broke from the kiss to see Solange's hair cascade down her shoulders. She looked like a different person instantly. Something had changed in her eyes as well. They were brimming with hunger. Aurore believed the best thing she could do was kiss Solange again. This time, her fingers freely gripped the back of Solange's head and she held on to her, held her close while their tongues danced, and Aurore expelled any admonishing thoughts from her mind. Maybe they were both hypocrites. Or just immensely silly for giving in to this. But no one ever needed to know. Besides, it was just a kiss. Even though Aurore felt more body parts tingle than just her lips.
Mon Dieu,
Solange said when they broke for air.
What are we doing?
I'm being an unbelievable cliché,
Aurore thought, but wisely kept that one to herself.
Just expressing ourselves without words, she said instead, which I'm enjoying very much.
Solange breathed in deeply, then cupped Aurore's jaw in her hands.
You are just so... I don't even have the words.
She pecked her lightly just under the cheekbone.
So unbelievable.
Keep going,
Aurore joked.
I could cry because of how much I want you right now. I don't know what has come over me. I don't know what's happening.
You're just being you. The real you. Without the big political job facade. Without all the things you've ever believed about yourself holding you back. Let me tell you, it's a beautiful thing to behold.
Solange kissed Aurore on the other cheek. Then her lips found their way to her mouth again, and shivers ran up Aurore's spine as their tongues kept meeting, exploring, as she felt Solange melt under the touch of her lips. Aurore knew she should in no way push. Solange held the reins, at least for tonight. And if tonight was all there would ever be between them, and Solange clammed up again, then that was how things would be. Solange's hand skated down from Aurore's cheek to her neck, resting there, her wrist close to her breast. When they broke from their kiss again, Aurore felt the need to take a deep breath, if only to somewhat steady the desire coursing through her blood.
I've never kissed a woman before.
Solange's words were choppy like her breath.
It's so different, yet also very much the same. It's strange.
But good, I hope, Aurore said.
Delicious. I can't get enough now that I've started.
When they kissed again, Solange's wrist dropped ever so gently against Aurore's chest. Aurore took it as a sign to increase the pressure on Solange's back. She let her lips slip from Solange's and started kissing a trail down her neck, then upwards again. She didn't know where this would be going, even though she very much knew, felt it rage throughout every cell of her body, where she would like it to end. But Aurore had been in this situation so many times before. She was used to holding back. It gave her a thrill. The thrill of anticipation that kept building and building until her mounting desire was finally met. Solange followed her example and kissed Aurore's neck. Her hand dropped down a little, the heel of it now resting on the curve of Aurore's breast.
I want you,
Solange whispered into her ear.
I really do. I just need some more time.
Aurore nodded and they started kissing again. Solange's hand didn't move anymore, and Aurore was very careful to let her know she was the one setting the pace, that nothing would happen that Solange wasn't more than ready for. When, after a long, delicious minute, Solange pulled back from her, Aurore let her go from her grasp and looked at her.
What?
Solange asked. So many questions, Aurore said. Solange let herself fall against the back of the sofa.
I can imagine, but I can't give you answers right now. Just,
she looked at her hands.
I didn't ask you here tonight so I could kiss you.
It wouldn't matter to me if you had. Or no, it would actually flatter me.
You must go around kissing other women all the time, but I don't.
Aurore chuckled. I do no such thing.
Don't you have a plethora of lovers?
A plethora? Where do you get your information? Is that what my Wikipedia page says? Because it's not true.
I'm sorry. I don't really know what to say right now, nor what to do.
You don't have to say anything.
Aurore reached for her hand again.
Why don't we have a look at those interview questions?
I don't really care about the questions. Not after kissing you like that. I trust you not to ask the president anything impertinent.
Aurore gazed into Solange's eyes. Who are you? Has the chief of staff's body been taken over by a socialist-friendly intruder? She grinned. How about I leave the list here? You can have a look at it after I've gone.
So you're not staying?
Solange squeezed Aurore's hand. I don't think that would be wise. If Solange could barely process a kiss, there was no way they could take this any further tonight. But I wouldn't mind if you kissed me again. Episode 18. Dominique.
Why am I so nervous?
Dominique sat between her chief of staff and Steph in the back of the car bringing them to the radio studio.
Maybe because you decided to one-up your own party. Again, Solange said.
Don't give me that, Solange. You came up with this idea. Don't start making me feel bad about it when I'm on the way.
Now that your father is not on speaking terms with you, again, I have to take his calls. Today alone he has rung me 4 times, Solange said. I've run out of things to say.
It's very simple, Dominique said. Next time he calls, don't pick up. Solange replied with a sigh. Dominique looked at Steph.
Do you still think I've made the right decision?
Any decision that defies La Roche Senior and extends a hand to the left is a good decision in my book.
Maybe I should have taken the time to convince the party after all, Dominique said. I've had too much on my mind lately. I didn't take the time to make a proper decision.
No, no, no.
Steph turned to her and put a hand on her knee.
You went with your gut, and in the end, that's what you're best at. This opportunity came up and you did the right thing grabbing it. The party will adjust. They always do.
I broke a promise to my mother, though. That doesn't sit right with me.
I'll talk to Eleanor, Steph said. I'll take her out to lunch tomorrow to smooth things over.
It's not fair that you get to deal with the easy parent, Solange said.
I don't get paid for my efforts, Steph said. I do it out of the sheer goodness of my heart.
Thanks for coming.
Dominique put a hand on Steph's.
You know Solange and I are not very adept at dealing with socialists.
Clearly one of you is getting better at it.
Steph grinned widely. Dominique gave her a look. She didn't want the two of them bickering again. Things have been going so well the past few days, but Steph just couldn't help herself. When Steph had told Dominique about what her friends had allegedly observed between Solange and Orosov at the dinner Dominique couldn't attend, she had been so stunned. She had accused Steph's friends of seeing way too much into every small thing, and had advised Steph to put that idea out of her head immediately. It was just too ridiculous for words. Solange didn't react to Steph's fate. Dominique hoped Steph would just let it go. Even though the thought of something, the tiniest of unexpected rapports existing between Solange and Aurore, did temporarily relieve Dominique's nerves. But she had made the decision to do this. She was on her way to an interview during which she would publicly, and live on air, express her support for the bill, without having consulted with her party first. Some old dinosaurs would be calling round her father's house tonight, asking for her head on a platter. No doubt telling him his daughter is too progressive to be an MLR president, that she was a disgrace to the values the party stood for. But her father would just have to deal with it. Seeing her own child lying helpless in a hospital bed was what had really changed Dominique's mind about not wanting to waste an ounce of her energy on trying to convince a bunch of old men in tailored suits that women who were not married to a man needed to have the same rights as any other woman. There was not an inch of leeway on that position at all. It was a given, and the current law an anomaly. The love for her little girl that had her in such a panic at the time had also realigned her with what was really important. Spending an evening with a bunch of men, half of whom still hadn't come to terms with the fact that their leader was a woman, living with a woman, suddenly seemed like such a waste of time and energy. If half of politics was, indeed, optics, Dominique would spend her precious time supporting the bill in public, rather than trying to win support for it from people whom it didn't even concern. "We're here," Solange said. "You're going to do great. This is what you do best, remember?" Dominique nodded. Being nervous beforehand was just part of the job. Once she got going, her nerves always quickly evaporated. "Let's do this," she said, and patted both her partner and her chief of staff on the knee. Anne Riviere was a striking woman. Dominique studied her from her seat while they were waiting to be called into the radio studio. As always, when faced with a promising socialist politician, she allowed herself to think for a brief moment what a waste of a fine politician that was. Riviere might make the socialists feel as though they were ready for a revival, but Dominique was convinced that the socialists would never make a full comeback unless they truly reinvented themselves. The world had changed. People responded to different things now, and the socialist message was a difficult one to get across through all the populist chatter and alt-right propaganda. Besides, Dominique had to believe that as long as she was in charge, someone like Riviere would stand a chance of taking her seat as president. An employee of the radio station came to escort them into the studio. Unlike Dominique, Anne Riviere had come alone. Maybe because she knew she was in friendly territory, whereas Dominique was clearly not. "Break a leg," Steph said. Solange gave her an uncharacteristic thumbs up. Both politicians were led into the heart of the action and fitted with a pair of headphones before being shown to their places in front of a microphone. As nervous as she had been before, that all evaporated, leaving Dominique cool and calm. That 1 minute before it all kicked off, that delicious tension running up her spine, the hint of trepidation, which might very well be something else entirely, but that was always how Dominique chose to interpret it in her opponent's eyes. And the sudden rush of knowing she had made the right decision. Dominique didn't belong in a stuffy dining room with a bunch of old fuddy-duddies. This was where she should be, talking to the people, building bridges, showing the MLR dinosaurs how it was done and why she was president. Aurore made her little intro speech and welcomed them both to the show. Courtesy obliged her to let Dominique as president speak first. She probably had Anne Riviere on her show every other week touting her progressive politics, some of which Dominique agreed with, but most of them were just too unrealistic for her MLR mind to even consider. "Your listeners might not have ever expected me on your show, but I'm thrilled to be here, Aurore," Dominique said. "And I'm equally thrilled to be here alongside Madame Riviere, who has shown the courage to right a wrong, although, if you'll allow me to say this, The socialists were in power for 5 years before I came along, and they never thought to fix this glaring inequality in the law while they were in charge. And off they went. In the limelight, Dominique could always hold her own. This was what she lived for. This was why she did this job, and why she was good at it. And why, ultimately, she would run for a second term. I myself am in a partnership with a woman, Dominique said, planning to go out with a bang and steal some more of Riviere's thunder while she was at it. Let's be honest. I'm getting on, but Stephanie is still young. What if she wanted a child, but I, as the president of this country, had to send her abroad because according to the law, she's not allowed to go to a sperm bank simply because she's not married to a man? She glanced at Riviere across from her. So I thank the député for finally introducing this bill and making our country a more equal place for women. And I thank you, Aurore, for inviting me here tonight. I had a blast. I hope I get to come back. I would love to have you and Stephanie as guests sometime. Aurore didn't even glance at Riviere to possibly give her the last word. She signed off, and they were all hustled out of the studio. Only then could Dominique take a deep breath. Well played, and Riviere held out her hand. We should talk sometime, Madam President. You've shown today that you're open to crossing the aisle. Give me a call if you ever want to take that a step further. I will. Dominique grasped Riviere's hand and sent her a warm smile. It was a pleasure to spend some quality time with you. I need to get back to my office. Bills to prepare and so on. You know how it is. Riviere smiled and walked towards the exit. Au revoir, let's talk tomorrow. After the door had closed behind Riviere, Aurore held out her hand to Dominique. Thank you for a great interview. Dominique shook it and said, You should come to dinner again. We need a do-over. She turned to Solange. Don't you think, Solange? Sure, yeah. Was that a blush on her cheeks? It usually took a bit more than Dominique going on a radio show to get Solange flustered. I can't believe you said that. Steph came up to Dominique. Right at the end. Just when I thought you were doing so well, you say something like that. It was a brilliant thing to say, Solange said. I just prefer for my uterus not to be spoken of for political gain, Steph said. Can you even imagine? Me with child? Solange shook her head. Why not? Aurore said. It's not the first time I've used you for political purposes, darling. Dominique said. Even though it had been a spur-of-the-moment kind of thing to say, Steph would have been far more offended by Dominique not putting her support behind this bill than by her mentioning Steph's name in that context on a radio show. Steph knew that was how politics worked, which was another reason why, most of the time, the two of them worked so well as a couple. And it won't be the last. Steph grabbed Dominique's hand. How about the four of us grab some dinner now? No need to wait for a formal invitation to the Élysée. I used to live around here, and I know just the place.
Now?
Solange all but shrieked.
That simply won't be possible.
Why not? It's late, and I'm starving. Steph looked at Dominique, who'd be the ultimate decision-maker.
Is this place you know equipped to deal with a last-minute presidential visit? Dominique asked.
Steph paused. Probably not. So here's my counteroffer. Pizza delivery at the Élysée. It'll be there by the time we arrive.
Wow, you've really gone and smashed my fantasies about the Élysée, Aurore said. Delivery pizza? Really?
She shook her head in jest.
I can be there in half an hour.
She smiled widely.
Solange, do you want to ride with me?
Dominique witnessed how Solange's eyebrows quirked up, and she was momentarily lost for words.
No. I should ride with the president.
Solange stammered. We can do with some more room in the back. Steph sported a wide grin on her face.
In that case, Solange had regrouped. I can give you a debrief in the car, Madame Sauve.
Steph. Oh my God, Steph said when they were alone in the back of the car. I think Nadia might actually be onto something here.
What do you mean? Dominique asked.
She was leaning on Steph's shoulder.
Solange and Aurore. I think it's on.
Are you still going on about that?
Shouldn't you be congratulating me on my stellar performance instead of obsessing about Solange's, frankly, non-existent sex life?
Steph gasped.
Do you think they're having sex?
She turned and made Dominique slip off her shoulder.
My mind hadn't even gone that far. I just can't picture it, you know. Solange having sex.
Don't be so hard on her. She's flesh and blood, just like us.
That's the first I've heard of that.
Steph wagged her finger in the air.
If you ask me, it's that porn video that did it. Solange's reaction to that was far too extreme. It got to her. It must have aroused her. And then she didn't know what to do with herself and decided to throw a puritanical hissy fit.
You'd better pipe down by the time Aurore and Solange arrive, babe. Don't scare her off. Solange deserves to have a good time. If something is going on between them, which I still very much doubt, then I'm happy for her.
Why else would Aurore ask her to ride with her? That just doesn't make any sense. Did you see how mortified Solange reacted?
She patted Dominique on the thigh.
I'm sorry, Madam President, but your chief of staff is stealing your thunder tonight.
Steph kept a keen eye on Solange. If the woman who had sat in that same chair accusing all of them of being too lesbian was now herself showing lesbian tendencies, she had to find out every last thing about it. Dominique had opened a bottle of Pauillac, and Aurore especially was enjoying its taste. Solange had only taken a tiny sip, as though she was scared of what a bigger sip combined with being in Aurore's company might do to her.
A toast. Steph raised her glass. To you, Aurore, for hosting such a wonderful, much-needed radio show.
Then she looked at Dominique.
To you, babe, for being your usual smashing self.
She shook her head.
I can't believe I even for a second considered not being with you anymore, let alone for a full week.
She kissed Dominique on the cheek, then turned to Solange.
And to the chief of staff, of course, for making it all happen. That really was some crafty chief of staffing you did there. You're not so bad after all.
I guess I should take that as a compliment, Solange said. They clinked their glasses together. I'm just glad you two can now be in the same room together without wanting to scratch each other's eyes out, Dominique said. They were worse than my children at times, she added to Aurore.
If we all make small compromises, we can usually get where we want to be, Aurore said.
Spoken like a true politician, Dominique said.
Aurore waved her hands and said, You made a serious move to the left today, Madam President. Some friendly newspapers will be hard on you tomorrow morning.
Then they are the fools. I should have come out in favor much sooner.
It's hard when you're president. You don't get to make the decision you want simply because you're in charge, Solange said. I don't think anyone anywhere gets to do that, Steph said.
She watched Solange cut a tiny sliver of pizza with her knife and fork. Steph had shared too many pizzas with Lisa and Didier to care much for decorum, let alone cutlery. It made her think of what they'd said in the car earlier.
Someone as prissy as Solange having sex? With Aurore?
She glanced at the pair of them.
Surely Aurore would need to do all the heavy lifting, so to speak.
What? Aurore asked.
Why are you looking at me like that? Oh, sorry. I was lost in thought.
Steph wouldn't be herself if she didn't pry a little.
I was just wondering how Solange did manage to pull all this off. I imagine convincing you was much harder than having to convince Dominique. You're a Riviere supporter. Especially after what went down after that dinner here.
There's no need to rack all of that up again. Dominique's tone was stern.
Solange has her ways. Aurore said and winked at Solange. Oh, I'm sure she does.
Steph examined Solange's face. What are you insinuating? Solange asked.
Nothing.
Steph shook her head.
Nothing at all. I should thank you, really. Not only for making this happen, but for coming to that dinner last Saturday as well. I really appreciated that.
Steph smiled at Solange. Maybe she had always gravely underestimated the chief of staff. Steph was judged all the time for how she looked. She should know better than to judge Solange the same way. Maybe underneath her proper and prim exterior, the woman brimmed with passion. And that was what Aurore saw in her,
Or maybe Dominique was right, and Nadia, and Steph herself by extension, was just imagining things. Maybe Aurore and Solange had simply struck up an unlikely friendship.
This question was vetoed by Solange, Aurore said. But I would like to ask you now, off the record. Are you starting to feel too hemmed in by your party and what it stands for? Clearly, this bill was a no-brainer for you on many levels, but party politics kept you from supporting it. Doesn't that bother you?
The party is changing. For the better, I believe. There's a whole new generation waiting in the wings. People like me, with a much more progressive agenda.
So you've never thought about breaking free and starting your own more centrist party? It's all the rage across Europe these days, Aurore said.
Never for one second, Dominique said. I sometimes disagree with people in the MLR, but I'm still loyal to them.
One can dream, though, Steph said. And if you were to run independently, I could run alongside you.
You already run alongside me, babe. Dominique shot her a smile. You're just not on any list.
I still think the MLR would be glad to see me go, Steph said. I'm sure quite a few members rolled their eyes when you insinuated I might want a child, or had a near stroke.
You're too hard on the party sometimes, Solange said.
Maybe, Steph replied.
For the rest of the evening, every time Solange said something, Steph wondered whether she was playing footsies with Aurore beneath the table. At one point, she considered dropping her fork so she could sneak a peek. But the chief of staff was much too cunning to get caught red-handed, or footed like that. Most of all, though, Steph was glad the four of them were sitting at the Élysée dining table together, and no fits were being thrown. The tone was cozy and respectful, and most of all, she and Dominique were firmly back together.
Camille went to work strengthened by the conversation she'd had with her friends, but even more so, by the thick file she had in her briefcase. For a long time now, she had let Duflo believe that he could continue his bullying without her doing anything about it, with her taking it in silence. On paper, he was an intelligent man, but his behavior towards her clearly disqualified him for working for the CNRS any longer. They were an institution of reputation, Camille advised the government. The president was a lesbian herself, which probably added to Duflo's chagrin. His own boss coming out had pushed him over some invisible edge, made him blow a fuse. Now it was time to let him know that he would not get away with it. He might be a civil servant, and his job protected by a law that made it very hard for him to get the sack, but he had broken too many rules for any old-fashioned statute to protect him. Duflo was done. Camille would make sure of that.
Bernice, can you ask Monsieur Duflo to come see me, please, as soon as possible and no matter what he's doing at the moment? It's urgent.
Bernice nodded, and Camille went into her office to wait. She laid out the file on her desk. Every email she had received, including a trace to who had sent them. Every threat that had been clumsily written on a piece of paper. A notebook filled with the things she'd heard whisper in the hallways. A knock came on the door.
Oui,
she said, bracing herself.
Bonjour, Camille.
Guillaume Massineuve, the head of HR, said. Camille invited him to sit. She couldn't fire Duflo on her own. She needed an independent witness to this meeting, as well as a display of HR power that was attached to Maisonneuve. She hadn't gone to HR immediately. At first, she had been too stunned, had thought Duflo's shenanigans were just a stupid, mindless prank, until they had continued and Camille had, along with Zoya, planned her strategy. She had gone to HR only when she'd had enough evidence, and she'd had to test the limits of her patience to stand it to that point. But she had managed, because she wanted Duflo to get the greatest punishment possible. She didn't only want him to be fired. She also wanted to make sure he wouldn't get scooped up by another government agency, as so often happened with disgraced civil servants.
He would not be given the opportunity to get back to his old antics every time he encountered a woman in power he didn't agree with. She wanted him properly punished and stained with a record that would make him undesirable for any future employers. Her lawyer had prepared a civil case, and Camille was thinking of pressing charges, all backed up by the head of HR. She would set an example, because she was strong enough to do so. She had all the support she needed, and other less privileged women might not.
"Are you ready?"
Guillaume asked. "More than ready," she said. She couldn't wait to get this over with, to get this whole sordid affair off her mind. Because that was the thing with being bullied. No matter how much you tried and put your energy into building a case and had the loving support of a partner, it still got under your skin. As much as she hated herself for it, and as much as she knew that she had done absolutely nothing wrong, Camille had questioned herself. And this was a real harm that bullies like Duflo inflicted. They made women feel less than, made them waste their time and energy on doubting themselves in the most irrational ways. Another knock came on the door. Bernice's head popped in. "Monsieur Duflo is here." Camille nodded.
"I'll let you do the talking," Guillaume said.
Camille didn't get up when Duflo entered, nor did Guillaume. She just pointed at the chair on the other end of her desk. When he noticed Maisonneuve, Duflo nervously rubbed his palms together. "Bonjour," Camille said.
What's this about?"
Duflo asked.
"Bernice didn't give me any information."
"I think you know very well what this is about." Camille planted her elbows on her desk and leaned in his direction. He recoiled. "You disobeyed my instructions on several occasions. You've been sloppy in your reports to me. You've actively undermined my authority within the department. I could go on and on."
"I've just been doing what I think is best for the department, based on my long experience here."
He looked at Maisonneuve for support.
"It's not my fault if you can't handle the pressure of the job and see everything you don't like as a personal attack on you."
Camille continued as if he hadn't spoken. "The thing is, Duflo, you did these things for one reason only." She cleared her throat. "What was particularly striking about your behavior is that it changed so abruptly after the office party. After I introduced you to my partner Zoya." Duflo shook his head.
"I have no idea what you're talking about."
Camille painted a small smile on her lips. She tapped the folder in front of her. "It's all here. Every last infraction against the rules of the CNRS.
All the emails." "What emails?"
Duflo said.
"I only ever send you professional emails."
Camille smiled again. "You're not as clever as you'd like to believe. Did you really think the fake addresses you set up couldn't be traced? If not to you, then to at least two people in your team, whom I will be going after next. You can be sure of that. The Institute has zero tolerance for the kind of behavior you displayed."
"What kind of behavior?"
Duflo's voice shot up.
"I haven't done anything."
He pointed at the folder.
"I have no idea what you've gotten there, but I can assure you I have nothing to do with it. As for anything else, it will always be my word against yours. People here know me. They know I'm a good guy."
"Maybe the pair you enlisted to do your dirty work for you might possibly lie for you, for a minute or two," Camille sighed. "Either way, it's not a confession I'm after. You're fired, Duflo. You have harassed me, taunted me, and bullied me, all because I fell in love with a woman. Your tactics may have worked a few decades ago, but this is France well into the 21st century. You may have some sort of fantasy that women, especially lesbian women, are not equal to you. But guess what? We are. Well, most of us are much better than you, clearly, because you've stooped to a level so low you're not worthy of being in the civil service anymore. Which is a shame. You're a good scientist, but you've just gone and ruined your career. And what over?" Camille narrowed her eyes and sought his gaze.
over something that doesn't even concern you. My private life. Of all the stupid things you can do. She looked down at the folder. Why? She glanced.